Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is John.
And I'm Kevin.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
Oh my gosh. Welcome back, everybody. Very, very excited to have you all here in these unprecedented times. We're recording again remotely from various parts of the country, really just Texas and Atlanta. So two parts of the country, and wishing you all well. Hopefully by the time you're listening to this, maybe some of the craziness will have worn off. That's the hope anyway, right?
Yeah, and we are joined again by Andrew.
Woo-hoo!
Hello, Andrew.
Yeah. So excited to have my buddy Andrew here with us. And we're talking, this is episode 2 of Over the Top.
Oh, classic. Man. We talk about Schwarzenegger being the icon of the genre, but Stallone is like a close second, right?
Definitely. Definitely at this time. He's on the Mount Rushmore of action gods of the era.
Who else rounds it out?
Willis
Van Damme.
Willis Van Damme. Yeah. I think that's a solid 4.
I think it is too. I think I think Seagal tried to weasel his way in there, but Seagal is not.
He doesn't make the cut for me.
Agreed.
He's like Dolph Lundgren level.
Agreed.
Yeah. I feel like he's the Franklin that doesn't make the cut of the Mount Rushmore, where like he had a role and he was there, but like he wasn't like upper statesman.
But that's the solid 4, I think, for sure. I'm trying to think what other big action stuff was Willis even in?
Oh man.
Last Boy Scout.
Another film was the one where Sarah Jessica Parker and he are like, he's a boat cop.
Oh yeah.
Striking distance.
Yes.
Nice.
Thank you.
Good call.
Yeah. That's one that I felt like would have been a likely, immediate follow-up to the film that we're talking about now, Over the Top. Like they would have played them back to back.
Other crazy shit like Hudson Hawk.
Yeah. A movie that gets roundly panned, but it's not terrible.
Yeah.
Speaking of Hawk.
That's right. Speaking of Hawk, we're going to talk about Over the Top now.
One or many.
So what happened in the last episode? Not a lot. Lincoln Hawk picked up. So Lincoln Hawk, truck driver and amateur arm wrestler, picks up his estranged son who he's not seen.
I call him arm wrestler and amateur truck driver.
he's not really a professional at anything, is what we've established. He does a lot of things sort of halfway.
Amateur truck driver, amateur father.
He's gotten paid more for arm wrestling at this point in the film than he has for driving his truck.
That's true. So he picks up Michael Cutler, his son, who he's not seen in 10 years, at the request of his sick wife, though we're not really sure what she's sick with. And she wants them to spend some time together, much to the dismay of Jason Cutler, the movie's villain, I guess, is really what you refer to him as in this case, who is pissed about Mike being with his dad. We've established that Link arm wrestles on the road. We meet up with another of the movie's more interesting characters, Bull Hurley, and we see Lincoln Hawk have his first arm wrestling match, which he wins and collects $1,000 plus. So
nice little payday.
Yeah, nice payday for hustling a truck stop bad guy, the Smasher.
But I don't call that, you know, Mike said he hustled the guy. He didn't hustle him.
He beat him fair and square.
He wasn't posing as a guy who doesn't know how to arm wrestle. Like his reputation preceded him.
Yeah, everybody.
That's not hustling.
Yeah. Mike doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about half the time. He just knows how to be an asshole. So that gets us caught up to episode 2 of Over the Top.
Right.
So take it away.
Correct. So Lincoln Hawk and Son are, they're back on the road in the western United States. There's more tense moments in the truck.
Yes.
The truck, which is it's like a big rolling product placement for Brute cologne.
Yes.
We didn't talk about how Lincoln leaves him out of the phone booth right before this.
The next kidnapping.
That's a second kidnapping opportunity. Just like shuts that door and like locks him out.
There's no reason.
And he turns his back on him too.
To be fair, he doesn't know how to be a dad.
Fair.
This is true. Oh my God. So they're driving, listening to a very soft ballad.
Yeah. It's
on
a good
radio.
It's a good song, Mike.
Mike reaches out. Yeah. He flips that radio off and Stallone is just, very tenderly, it's like, oh, that was a nice song. It's like they fight over that radio, over that turning the radio on and off.
You're
like
wearing out the knob, Mike.
Yeah, it's like eight times they did that, and I feel like Menachem was like, "Do it again, do it, turn it, click it one more time, click it again."
Imagine in a movie that's about 87 minutes long, if this was 1 minute of that.
from listening to and enjoying this show, Kevin, I get the impression that you've got like film background on some stuff. Do you think they were listening to a song while this was happening, or this was just empty and they're trading barbs?
No. They plugged that song in after. Probably Giorgio Moroder. He was still in the Beats laboratory working on that one. But no, there's no chance. But it's odd. In this movie, in Cobra, and some of the Rocky movies, Stallone's characters are always listening to these really soft, like, power ballads. Like, I don't know if that was what he as a man was into, or if it's just, you know, the record label and the studios working together to push this artist or that artist. I think there was a Frank Stallone song on this soundtrack as
really?
Wasn't there?
I can't remember. Maybe
it's one of the lesser songs, yeah, right. But still Frank.
Mm-hmm. Was it the one that was playing in the bar? Maybe.
Oh, I hope not. That one was so bad.
I liked that. I dug that one. It's, yeah, 80s. It's awesome. It is definitely awesomely bad.
So that when they're done fighting over the radio, then Mike asks Hawk if he's a drug dealer.
He just really,
which is apparently, like pivot. That's what Granddad told
logical
him.
Logical pivot from the song Frustration to, are you a drug dealer, sir? Do you still deal drugs? Because yeah. That's what my grandfather said.
So Hawk quickly denied it. And he said, where'd you hear that? Where'd you hear that from? Your granddad? And I think Mike is like, he gave me the facts.
Jesus. Mike is such a dick.
But Hawk, he says his only mistake that he ever made was leaving. He's like, I thought to myself, that's a pretty fucking major mistake, though.
Yeah, that's like the that's like the whole point of this movie.
On the Mount Rushmore of mistakes, that's,
leaving your wife and child big. Is high atop the list.
Abandoning your family. Abandoned my boy.
It's at this moment that we see them in their not intuitive course from Colorado to California, driving along the south rim of the Grand Canyon.
You would have entered into the national park to be driving on that road. So he took
Mike.
And I've been there. It's not a fast moving road. And yeah, that's the route he took, which maybe he does want his son to see some stuff.
But he also has to deliver that Fabergé Brute trailer.
Yeah, man.
This cologne is going bad.
This is again like bad truck driving. He's got to make money. It's by like delivery date. And yet he takes the scenic route to get there. Like
maybe he justified it because of the $1,000 plus he just won from the Smasher.
Yeah. Someone is waiting on this cologne though.
Yeah.
And also he's got a wife who's at death's door that they're just taking their sweet ass time.
Not making any effort to get there quickly for sure.
But so Hawk asks him, how do you like the arm wrestling match? And I think Mike says it was an experience, and Hawk kind of proudly is like, sure was.
I kind of sympathize with the kid here though, because he's been brought to a bar for lunch full of truckers.
He was the sweatiest people in America.
Kind of molested by a giant man.
Boy, you got
not like
handsy.
not like full on molested, but like, you know,
he was touched.
General just sense. Tender, like, he was touched by a stranger. Experience then, is a good description. Like yeah, that's high ranking.
I think he was generous with his description.
Yeah. And then Link cranks that music back up as sort of a victory.
That's right.
Yeah.
I won that one.
So now
one down for Lincoln.
Now the action moves to the hospital where Jason Cutler, that's Robert Loggia, is visiting his daughter, Christina.
Mm-hmm.
And what she asks if he's angry.
Yeah. She asks if he's angry and he says he's not. But he is disappointed. That's a total fucking dad thing to say.
The classic line. That's such a guilt tripping your daughter when she's on her deathbed.
Right? There's something up with Cutler, man. And we're going to talk. But this relationship is, it's all wrong from the beginning, from the get go. Like there is something weird and almost sinister about the relationship and the treatment from Cutler to Christina that had me wondering for a lot of it. I was like, is it like Munchausen's? Was he making her sick to keep her under his control?
You went deep.
Yeah. I was like, it's just
there's
weird.
A million possibilities. It could be he's taking advantage of her illness or he's playing it. He's turned it to his advantage.
Yeah.
And he's controlling taking this her. Kid. I mean, we haven't gotten quite to this point yet, but her name is Christina Hawk.
Right.
And yeah. He's Lincoln Hawk.
Right.
And yet the son's name is Cutler.
Yeah, you have to wonder which one is the obsession. Is it his daughter or is it the grandson?
I feel like this whole thing is Jason Cutler wanted a male heir.
That's a great point.
And,
yep.
And yep. He is making Mike Hawk his heir.
Mike Hawk.
He said, no, we're changing his name. We're changing his name to Cutler. And yeah, he's my boy.
It's so weird. It's so weird. She says she just wanted Michael to know his father.
That's right.
And he's mm-hmm. like, not surely you understand that I'm all the family Michael will ever need is a fucked up line.
When she says you're not his father, he becomes very like agitated.
I've been his father. Says he's years.
So
his voice is crazy.
Do we think Mike is 12 years old? Is that established? His whole life.
He establishes it in like the next scene that he's 12.
Okay.
When he's making fun of his dad's IQ.
So that's his whole life. Do you think was Link around for the birth of the boy?
Well, he hasn't seen the kid in 10 years, so there's like some weird math going on. You're right.
Yeah. Very sketchy math. Yeah, Link was around when Mike was first born and then left him as a toddler or was forced out is what I start to think. We'll get into more of this because it's sort of like bits and pieces of the puzzle start to be revealed, but they still never tell you like what the fuck happened.
I'm sure we're going to get way into it.
Yeah.
Out in the hallway, Jason Cutler tells the daughter's doctor that if there are any calls for her on her private line, he wants to know about it.
Dick.
And the doctor is like, yes, Mr.
Will
Cutler.
Do.
First, fucking doctors don't monitor phone calls. So that just wouldn't happen. But also, how is this doctor? He's like a flunky to Cutler.
Everyone is a flunky to the old rich white man.
Yeah.
In this situation.
And I've got to jump in here with like the fact that we've seen him full body now. And that is the worst fucking suit that has ever existed.
Yeah. Jason.
Double breasted suits are unflattering no matter what.
On everyone.
But like. It's awful. It's boxy as shit. And every time he moves, like the whole like front of it opens up in a weird way. And he's immediately untrustworthy based on his sartorial decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. Money doesn't buy good taste, apparently. But I get the fact that, you know, my daughter's private line that he is monitoring, like, and the doctor's in on it. The doctor is being paid to monitor Christina. It's so weird.
There's some nefarious shit going on here.
And then Secretary Dweeb sort of intimates that, you know, our people haven't been able to find it. So he's trying to have Michael and Hawks surveilled to. Yes. And so it's like, Jesus Christ, who is he and what does he do for a living? So anyway,
I have theories that we'll get to later. Yeah. So then back in the truck,
Jesus. I'm not excited about this.
This is a low point.
Yeah.
I'll try to I'm gonna reset. Back in the truck, Hawk has decided that this is a good place to stop and spend the night, which Mike goes along with. He doesn't really have a choice.
Yeah. Is this the most cringeworthy moment of the whole film?
Oh yeah.
Big time.
Yes, it's hard to pick that.
I mean,
though.
I jotted down half the dialogue, but he asks, why did we stop? And Hawk always with like seductive delivery. I think we all need to rest.
It's Mike's sort of sexy.
Mike's looking around. He's like, I don't see a hotel. He's like, I thought we'd stay in the truck tonight. A lot of truckers do it.
Yeah, it totally sounds like they rolled up at a rest stop on the side of the road, and it's like time for a BJ or something.
A lot of truckers do a lot of things. Yeah. I think that's not necessarily things that they should be emulating, though.
No. To their children.
He's supposed to come off as like wise and stuff, but he comes off as a damn creep to me.
Yeah. Well, and it's also the fact that Menachem Golan decided that it was at this moment, as they're having this exchange, that they're like those slow zooms to Lincoln while he's saying, you know, a lot of truckers do it. And then there's a pivot back to Michael, and he's like got this unsure look on his face, and it's a slow zoom on him. So it's like he's setting it up like it's romantic.
This scene seems to me like somebody who watched It Happened One Night, like a classic with Clark Gable, and like is a great movie. And like you've got this like snobby rich woman being carried across the country by like a blue collar guy. Like this had that same sort of feel, but it's a father and son, and it's like they force that dynamic onto this weird father son relationship that should be like a buddy relationship.
Yeah.
And it's like weirdly sexual and awful.
I don't know how Stallone managed to give this performance without realizing this was a bad idea. The way it was being played.
Well, I think that from what,
he's fidgeting with the steering wheel, like the way that a guy would play a scene where he's on a first date and he's nervous.
Yeah. And then there's all the awkward talk about like, if your neck gets sore, you can use my shoulder as a pillow. Fucking what?
Yeah.
And Mike's like, no, I'll be fine. He's like, you sure? Cause it's like, and it wouldn't let it go. It's like, I'm not going to let this go.
You sure? He says, I really don't mind.
God damn it.
This is literally the most awkward scene that I can recall almost in any movie I've ever seen. The way it's played, and I give the kid Mendenhall credit, like his face is like he's given a what the fuck are you talking about face. And I keep sending you that screen grab, John, and text just randomly. We could drop it on the Facebook or something as well.
For sure.
I'll put it up on the Instagram. Yep. But then Hawk says, well, I think we're getting along just fine, Mike. And it's like, dude, read the fucking room.
Yeah.
Link, no. This is not okay. This kid couldn't be more terrified.
And then they go to sleep under a single street light with the windows open and the doors unlocked.
That's like kidnap opportunity.
Supposedly,
number three, right?
Like this is. Yeah.
Like there's nothing stopping anyone from pulling over and abducting Mike from that unlocked truck.
I guess Hawk doesn't know that they're being hunted.
Right.
Does he?
No, I don't think he assumes that they are.
Okay.
I don't think the film knows that they're being hunted at this point. Like, there's been no indication that anyone's chasing after them or anything. This is always the part of the movie as a child that I was just like, get to the arm wrestling.
Exactly. It's like, when is the fucking arm wrestling happening? Yeah. The scene with the Less smasher talking. Was the best thing that's happened so far.
Yeah.
Then they wake up the next morning and switcheroo, he's using Mike's shoulder as a pillow. Cute.
It's, I know it's meant to be a big laugh. I wonder if in theaters, if there was laughter.
I don't think anyone laughed in this movie except for like how bad it is.
I think everyone was probably just so creeped out.
They're like, what the fuck is this?
So they get a little morning workout in. They're sort of doing these one-armed half pull-ups on the grill of the truck.
Yeah.
You got a...
Getting their calisthenics in to Meet Me Halfway by Kenny Loggins.
Yes. The soundtrack, it was like another love ballad.
Yeah,
playing over it. It was borderline like pornographic almost.
It's that smooth music. Baby.
in my notes, I literally wrote montage to Meet Me Halfway. This song is to fuck to. What are they doing?
It totally is.
Somehow they're bonding a little bit.
Yeah,
though.
I love that you said that they're bonding, because the next note in my notes is that all it takes to bond with your dad is some Loggins and a night in a truck.
They've been through a lot together.
It gets cold in the desert at night.
That's right. We should also note that when we see them driving again, now they're in Monument Valley on the Arizona-Utah border.
Which is further away from Los Angeles than the Grand Canyon is. So they're moving away from where they need to be going. And that's also not, I've driven that road and it's amazing, but it is not the quick way to get from here to there. It's the out of the way way to see some awesome scenery.
Lincoln Hawk budgeted for this shortfall.
Yep. They could have. The thing is, these are all cutaways. They could have just dropped these insert shots in at least a way that makes geographical sense. Like put the Monument Valley in place of the Grand Canyon and then put the Grand Canyon in this place.
No one knows. No one knows at all.
Nobody knows. Oh, and then Hawk is demonstrating his improvised sort of in the truck workout machine.
That is a jerk off practice machine.
You jerk it with some authority.
He tells him, you know, the trick is you got to use your whole body as one piece of machinery.
Yeah,
that's right.
That lit the fuse.
That's right.
To the monumental moment that comes later in the film.
That's right. And then Mike starts to what? Like insult Hawk's intelligence. Like, I don't see any books in your truck, you dumbass.
Yeah, he says, you don't read much, do you? It's like, hard to read when you're fucking driving.
Yeah, where the fuck did this come from, you asshat? Like, and so, but I love this bit where Hawks pulls over and Mike's like, are you going to get violent?
Dude, Hawk was just like absorbing that abuse.
He has been for 24 hours straight, except for the tender calisthenics.
No offense, but you're just on a different social scale. Dude, that's like some Nazi type talk.
Yeah. At some point he says like if they have good genetics, which made me, I was like, this kid advocating for eugenics? Like
he's like, yeah, he's talking about the average adult's mental age is just 15, just 3 years older than me. But for a trucker, it's probably 12 or 13.
That's a big assumption.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, unless they have good genetics. And it's like, well, first of all, this guy, Lincoln Hawk, is your genetics.
Yeah, exactly.
So you better hope his genetics were decent. But yeah, the kid comes off as just, there's nothing likable about him at this moment.
No. Total shit stick. I hate him.
Hawk reverts to his sarcastic passive aggression.
Yeah.
And he's like, yo, you think it's so easy? You think you can move this machine?
Again, is it? His money is based on delivering payloads on time, and he's letting this kid fuck around and drive his truck while the semi, like, trailer is attached.
He's grinding the gears. He's, like, fucking burning out the clutch.
Yeah, that's, like, his livelihood being put in direct jeopardy. Yep.
But also, there's no logic to the whole... So he's going to prove that he's no dummy because driving this truck is hard. But then the kid
immediately learns,
masters it quickly, which I feel like supports the kid's argument more than someone's, but they bond over it.
It doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, why is this scene? Like
that proves Hawk wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But then Hawk says, that wasn't so hard, was it? It's like, well, then the kid is like, what, sir? And he says, smiling.
Aww. Mm-hmm. Heartwarming.
So shitty.
A heartwarming moment.
I'm not a fan of this relationship.
No, I'm with you. As an adult watching this movie, I hate Mike so much.
Now, back at Cutler, this is funny, John. You wrote on the notes, back at Cutler's lair, which it really is. But yeah, now we cut back to Cutler's lair. He tells his secretary, his manservant, that we're going to have to deal with this the old-fashioned way.
The fuck does that mean? So, this is where we're clued in that he's had people for sure following them, because he's like, he gets off the phone with someone. He's like that he's berating because they can't find him. They can't find right. Michael or Lincoln. But like, and what the fuck does the good old, like the old fashioned way mean?
This would have been a perfect opportunity to explain a little bit of what happened in the past to drive this family apart.
Yeah.
Or that he's in the mob.
Exactly. Cutler. Cutler, I feel like Cutler is maybe like the Robert Duvall character to the mob. Like he's sort of the
consigliere.
Yeah. Like the consigliere, the lawyer kind of deal.
He does have two kick-ass leather Chesterfield couches in his office, which means
his
lawyer.
His office is well appointed as fuck.
I think he runs a trucking line. And he's got muscle. I feel like he's got a network of guys.
Yep.
Trucker looking guys who will do dirt for him all over the Western United States.
Interesting. I'm into this theory.
He's got kidnappers. It sounds he's got a goon squad in every town.
That's true. That's true. And he's got eyes and ears all over the American West, looking for, you know, keeping their ears to the ground, trying to find.
Hey, Bird Dog, got your ears on? I think it's all done over CB radio.
100%.
And beepers.
I don't know. So now Mike and Son are at this roadside diner having some breakfast.
That's right.
Where it seems like Mike was eating cake.
Yeah, he says the cake didn't stand a chance, which is bullshit because wasn't he just talking about like shitty eating habits and like,
yes.
Which way is it, Mike? Hawk, which is it?
Hawk is rubbing off on him in like all the worst ways.
That's he's right. Wearing his hat
he's
now.
He's eating junk food now. He's telling him like, hey, Mike says he was hungry and Hawk says driving a truck will do that. Every line he delivers has like some type of sexual overtone to it himself. It feels like to me.
I feel like this
my own baggage.
I feel like this upcoming scene has one of the most sexual overtones and I want to jump into that in a minute, but I feel like he basically pimps him out.
Interesting. He does. It feels very awkward now watching it.
Yeah, yeah. What we're talking about here is that as they're walking out, Hawk notices there's a couple of kids playing like arcade games or pinball or whatever they got going on there in the diner. And then he decides that he's going to sort of pit Mike against them and like to hustle a single dollar or to teach his son a life lesson. I don't know, but
it's supposed to be like to teach Mike a lesson about trying. Stepping outside of your comfort zone.
This is world-class parenting on display.
It's only day two.
He asked the kid, he's like, you feeling strong?
I used to love this scene as a kid, like loved it. Now,
did you like that? The lead bully is priceless.
Yeah, that kid, he's got moxie. He's engaging.
He's got like the open shirt with sleeves cut off.
With like cut off gloves.
Very modest muscles, but like just a rockin' mullet.
It is amazing.
His hair is like just needle straight like mine is too. So like I think that's what my hair would have looked like had I been tween of the 80s.
He's got it spiked straight up.
There's still time to rock that mullet.
Get it going.
Yeah. Get started. Today's the day.
The lead kid. So what? He's asking if he thinks that any one of them could beat Mike in arm wrestling.
Yep.
And the lead boy is like super aggressive.
Yeah.
He's like, kid, if I couldn't beat you, I'd kill myself.
Hyperbole. It's a little hyperbolic.
But I like an over the top villain.
Like a truck.
Oh, then they lock arms. The dude's doing a pretty good psych out. He's like, you ready, wimp?
Yeah.
And, oh, dude, my favorite line, his skin feels like a girl's.
Maybe he is a girl. Yeah, the kids, those kids are believable bullies. I like it.
They are mm-hmm. prototype 80s bullies.
It was about time. We haven't had any good acting since Bull Hurley.
Yeah.
I know. The casting director only has an eye for villains, perhaps.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting now. So what, the kid beats Mike?
It's a fairly evenly matched thing, but yeah, the bully wins.
Mike puts up a decent contest, but then runs out in disgrace.
Mike got very emotional. Yeah.
Pussy.
He ran out of there. This bit blows my mind. Like, first, the kid, he flipped on him in a heartbeat. Is through tears, he's telling him, all you wanted to do is embarrass me. Well, you did, okay? Grandfather always said you were a loser, and now you're trying to make me one, and I hate you for it. I love that.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a tough pill to swallow.
They had just been best of friends
five
minutes earlier.
Well, and then Hawk's move, Hawk's apostrophe S or S apostrophe, depending on what you want to get into here.
Hawks's move.
This is the like kind of pimpy moment where like he's talking to one of his women and he's like, he gives him a few insults and then like lovingly talks him back into going in, like getting back in there to do something he doesn't really want to do. Like this scene made me super uncomfortable watching it the other day. I was like, now it's time to do it for yourself.
The world meets nobody halfway.
Except for that song immediately beforehand.
The song directly contradicts like Link's only life advice, which is that the world meets nobody halfway. And the song says, please meet me halfway.
He's telling him, if you want it, you got to go take it. And it's like, that's also not great advice.
As long as you lose like a winner, it doesn't matter because you did it with dignity.
Yes.
Which is
that's good advice.
Be a good, a good loser too.
But you're right, Andrew. He had just told him, you know, you're a spoiled rich brat who's always had everything done for him and all this. That was the beginning of the pep talk.
Got to tear him down.
He ended on a high note, though.
Yeah. He kind of like smooth talks him back in there like, oh, man, this is going to be terrible for you. But also,
now get in there and suck that dick.
It's got that sort of feel to it. It's weird.
Oh, my God. We might have to cut that out. He gets him back in there. Mike is overacting so hard.
Yeah, he has suddenly become his father's son. All of a sudden.
He's channeling that fury. Yeah.
He's like, time to go to work, right, Mike? And Mike's like, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Hawk flips that hat around backwards on Mike's head.
Which I'm going to do now in solidarity. Just flip around my Bono head.
They're trash talking in each other's face as well.
Yep. Yeah. I think your breath stinks. Yeah, man. I loved that line growing up. We thought that that was the funniest burn ever when we were kids. And it's not. It sucks. It's like, that's zero. That's zero funny.
Kid, but Mikey takes him down back-to-back matches.
How'd he do that?
It's pretty sweet. I thought it was petty as hell for Hawk, actually, to make the kid pay as well.
Immediately.
He's like,
all right, pay up.
Pay up now.
Well, he's got to get income from something because he's not delivering his camera on time.
That's true. Oh, my God. What would have been sweet, I thought, is if Mike had like put the other kid's arm through the glass, like on the pinball machine, like just blood everywhere.
In slow-mo. Just glass flying in slow-mo everywhere.
That would have been awesome.
Yes.
That like 80s delay sound effect.
Yes.
So they're all best of buddies again now.
That's right.
Hawk
Water
and
under
Hawk
the bridge.
And Mike. They go to call Christina, mom, and tell her how great everything is now. Friggin' Hawk is like rolling up Mike's sleeves, and Mike's lying about his big win. He's like, the guy was huge. You wouldn't believe it.
I learned how to drive a truck, and I'm really good.
Dude, Christina, it looks like she's fading fast.
Yeah, Christina's not doing well. And she and Lincoln start to have a conversation, and she's like, what, like asking him to make nice with her dad. She wants peace between him and her father. And she wants Mike to stay with Hawks no matter what.
And then she's like, I know how difficult this is for you. I guess that just means the bad relationship between Cutler and Jason Cutler and Hawk.
Yeah.
I understand though why she would want peace.
Yeah, absolutely.
The family.
Absolutely.
It's a dying wish. But she says, try to understand him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think there's any understanding. There's no reasoning with Jason Cutler.
No, it's pretty black and white with Jason Cutler.
Oh, and Mike had said as he handed off the phone, he's like, she sounds so weak. It's like, dude, you guys are wasting a lot of fucking time trying to get to her.
Time
That's
to get
all
in the truck
I could think of.
And go, man. Go, go, go. We got to leave. And it's at this point.
Yes. Kidnapping opportunity number 5 or 6. Or more.
Kidnapping success.
He's got his back turned. Yeah, kid's wandering around the parking lot.
And wouldn't you know it,
a couple of goons run up and just scoop Mike up and run off with him.
I guess that's Cutler's old-fashioned way.
that's what I was thinking. This must be the old-fashioned way. It's just some good old-fashioned kidnapping.
Yeah.
The way we used to do it back in the day. Fucking weird. There's a sweet chase scene, though. After Hawk gets the shit beat out of him in the parking lot of the diner they were eating at.
There was a little bit of fisticuffs in the parking lot as well, including like Hawk throwing that one guy into a car that was up on a jack and knocking it off the jack.
Yep. Yeah, it's a cool fight scene. Cool fight scene, cool chase scene.
I just got to think logically, there's no way that the Hawk hauling truck chases down a pickup truck that's got a head start.
You don't know what kind of engine he's rocking in that thing.
I guess so. He had dropped off the brute trailer, right? So now it was just the rig.
He ditched it. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
We don't know effectively if he delivered it or if he just like left it. There's never a moment to like insinuate that he delivered that payload. He's just at another diner and now no longer has the semi.
It's kind of dangerous for Hawks to force a wreck with his unseatbelted child in the other car, right?
Yes. Then he came after the goons with a flashlight. Our first Maglite product placement.
That's right. I always love that, though. I always think of Maglites as being super bad. It's like a weapon. It's going to double
it
as a weapon.
It's like heavy steel or aluminum or whatever it is. But the goons run off. They've been frightened off by Hawk's rage. Hawk seems to know who sent them. He yells after them, you know, to tell Cutler that Mike is staying with me, or the boy stays with me, or something along these lines. We hear approaching police sirens, but we never see an interaction with the police. I figure this would have been quite a scene, a big delay on the road to the hospital.
Right. I wondered, and maybe one of you guys can answer this, what does Mike think about the fact that his grandfather just tried to have him kidnapped? And also, why didn't they? Do we think that they talked to the cops, or do we think that they left the accident scene?
Mike seems indifferent or to not acknowledge that this happened.
Right? It's really weird.
He wasn't that, yeah, he wasn't as scarred or traumatized by it as you would think. But obvious, it should be, if there was ever a doubt between who has your best interest in mind, this should seal the deal that it's not Mr. Cutler.
Yeah, it's not Jason Cutler for sure.
I think there probably was an interaction with the police, because I mean, they wrecked into other cars.
A lot of them.
Right. But those guys ran off.
So those dudes ran off. Yeah, for sure. Hawk doesn't strike me as the hit and run kind of guy. Like,
and again, he puts his livelihood at risk by slamming it into a truck.
He even says here, this is really going to break the resale. Like, he was going to get a mint for this truck to begin with.
Did he say that?
Yeah. But he says this is going to break the resale as the scene shifts. And so it makes me think that he had plans to sell his truck to use as his betting money for himself in the tournament in Vegas.
He was always planning to hawk that truck.
Yeah. Hawk that truck. Hawk the truck.
Hawks it.
Hawk. Anyway, I love it. Anyway. I love it. But yeah, there was a lot of property damage. I imagine they stayed and talked to the police. But then there's like an attempted kidnapping, and yeah, there would have been a lot more loose threads in the story.
Any idea who tried to have him kidnapped? Yeah, his grandfather. Yes,
his name is Jason Cutler. He lives here. But that makes a lot more loose ends. It's easier just to cut that scene out.
I mean, and we learn in the very next scene from Jason Cutler, back at the Cutler lair, his lawyer's visiting, and he says that there's not a judge anywhere that's going to award Jason custody of the boy. And the lawyer calls Lincoln Hawks with an S.
Yeah.
Hawks. So he's continued on ever since. It's almost like ever since Bull Hurley called him Hawks, he's been Hawks ever since.
He is that powerful.
For the past 20 minutes or so of the film.
When Bull Hurley says a thing, that thing gets done.
Cutler tells him, like, he lost everything. He can't even take care of himself.
So what do we think about, like, what did he lose? Like, what did Hawks lose?
I don't know.
Lose?
Just more vague allusions to past mystery.
This is a movie about obsession. He's obsessed with Hawk and obsessed with the child.
This is the Citizen Kane of arm wrestling.
He's
movies.
Obsessed with his dog. Like, yeah, it has that kind of. I feel like somebody writing it or somebody directing it was like, this is a movie that's about obsession.
It's like, the truth, though. It's
yeah,
so
there's
weird.
No letting go of anything within this.
But unlike Citizen Kane, the answers never come.
No. I love that he's speaking on behalf of old rich white men everywhere. Cutler says, there's always a way to bend the law. Isn't that your job? Find a loophole, to his lawyer. Right. Like, fucking do my bidding, regardless of the legal ramifications, please.
Yeah.
Basically, if kidnapping doesn't work, we'll try it through the legal system.
By fucking the legal system.
Yes. That winds us down for another chapter, guys.
I love it.
Holy crap.
It flies by. Awesome. Time flies when you're talking about hot garbage.
I am ready to go. I mean, I don't even feel like the story hasn't even gotten that crazy yet. Not as crazy as it gets. I don't know. This whole movie's fucking crazy.
We've only talked about 39 minutes of this movie.
We've only seen one arm wrestling match so far.
Yeah,
that's true.
No, wait. The boys counts. The boys counts too. Two matches.
Or if you want to count them all as individual.
That's right. Individual matches.
Wrestling.
Against mullet thug number one.
They're about to start coming hot and heavy, though.
That's
so.
Right. If you couldn't get enough before, stand by.
If sweaty muscles is your bag, you're gonna love the next few episodes.
All right. We'll leave it there, folks.
Yes, we'll be back.